the Aurora drifted helplessly throughout May 7th. On the morning of May 8th, the weather cleared a little, and the western mountains became indistinctly visible. Cape Bird could also be seen. The ship was moving northwards with the ice. The daylight was no more than a short twilight of about 2 hours' duration. The boiler was being filled with ice, which had to be lifted aboard, broken up, passed through a small porthole to a man inside, and then carried to the manhole on top of the boiler. Stenhouse had the wireless aerial rigged during the afternoon, and at 5 p.m. was informed that the watering of the boiler was complete. The wind freshened to a moderate southerly gale with thick drift in the night, and this gale continued during the following day, the 9th. The engineer reported at noon that he had 40 pounds of pressure in the boiler and was commencing the thawing of the auxiliary sea connection pump by means of a steam pipe. "Cape Bird is the only land visible, bearing northeast true, about 8 miles distant," wrote Stenhouse on the afternoon of the 9th. "So this is the end of our attempt to winter in McMurdo Sound. Hard luck after 4 months buffeting, for the last 7 weeks of which we nursed our moorings. Our present situation calls for increasing vigilance. It is 5 weeks to the middle of winter. There is no sun, the light is little and uncertain, and we may expect many blizzards. We have no immediate water supply, as only a small quantity of fresh ice was aboard when we broke drift. The Aurora is fast in the pack and drifting God knows where. Well, there are prospects of a most interesting winter drift. We are all in good health, except Grady, whose rib is mending rapidly. We have good spirits, and we will get through. But what of the poor beggars at Cape Evans and the Southern Party? It is a dismal prospect for them. There are sufficient provisions at Cape Evans, Hut Point, and, I suppose, Cape Royds, but we have the remaining Burberries, clothing, etc., for next year's sledging still on board. I see little prospect of getting back to Cape Evans or anywhere in the Sound. We are short of coal and held firmly in the ice. I hope she drifts quickly to the northeast. Then we can endeavour to push through the pack and make for New Zealand, coal, and return to the barrier eastward of Cape Crozier. This could be done, I think, in the early spring, September. We must get back to aid the depot laying next season. A violent blizzard raged on May 10th and 11th. "I never remember such wind force," said Stenhouse. "It was difficult to get along the deck." The weather moderated on the 12th, and a survey of the ship's position was possible. "We are lying in a field of ice, with our anchors and 75 fathoms of cable on each hanging at the bows. The after moorings were frozen into the ice astern of us at Cape Evans. Previous to the date of our leaving our winter berth, 4 small wires had parted. When we broke away the chain, 2 of the heavy 4-inch wires parted close to shore. The other wire went at the butts. The chain and 2 wires are still fast in the ice and will have to be dug out. This morning we cleared the ice around the cables, but had to abandon the heaving in as the steam froze in the return pipes from the windlass exhaust, and the joints had to be broken and the pipe thawed out. Hook was listening in from 8:30 p.m. to 12:30 a.m. for the Macquarie Island wireless station, 1,340 miles away, or the Bluff, New Zealand station, 1,860 miles away, but had no luck. The anchors were hove in by dint of much effort on the 13th and 14th. Ice forming on the cable as it was hoisted through a hole cut in the floe. Both anchors had broken, so the Aurora had now 1 small kedge anchor left aboard. The ship's position on May 14th was approximately 45 miles north, 34 miles west of Cape Evans. "In 1 week we have drifted 45 miles, geographical. Most of this distance was covered during the first 2 days of the drift. We appear to be nearly stationary. What movement there is in the ice seems to be to the northwest, towards the icebound coast. Hands who were after penguins yesterday reported much noise in the ice about 1 mile from the ship. I hope the floe around the ship is large enough to take its own pressure. We cannot expect much pressure from the south, as McMurdo Sound should soon be frozen over and the ice holding. Northeast winds would drive the pack in from the Ross Sea. I hope for the best. Plans for future development are ready, but probably will be checkmated again. I took the anchors aboard. They are of no further use as separate anchors, but they ornament the forecastle head, so we put them in their places. The supply of fresh water is a problem. The engineer turned steam from the boiler into the main water tank, starboard, through a pipe leading from the main winch pipe to the tank top. The steam condenses before reaching the tank. I hope freezing does not burst the tank. A large tabular iceberg, carved from the barrier, is silhouetted against the twilight glow in the sky about 10 miles away. The sight of millions of tons of fresh ice is most tantalizing. It would be a week's journey to the berg and back over pack and pressure, and probably we could bring enough ice to last 2 days. The record of the early months of the Aurora's long drift in the Ross Sea is not eventful. The galley condenser was rigged, but the supply of fresh water remained a problem. The men collected fresh fallen snow when possible, and hoped to get within reach of fresh ice. Hook and Ninnis worked hard at the wireless plant, with the object of getting in touch with Macquarie Island, and possibly sending news of the ship's movements to Cape Evans. They got the wireless motor running and made many adjustments of the instruments and aerials, but their efforts were not successful. Emperor penguins approached the ship occasionally, and the birds were captured whenever possible for the fresh meat they afforded. The Aurora was quite helpless in the grip of the ice, and after the engine room bilges had been thawed and pumped out, the boilers were blown down. The pressure had been raised to 60 pounds, but there was no chance of moving the ship, and the supply of coal was limited. The story of the Aurora's drift during long months can be told briefly by means of extracts from Stenhouse's log. May 21st. Early this morning there appeared to be movements in the ice. The grating and grinding noise makes one feel the unimportance of man in circumstances like ours. Twilight towards noon showed several narrow open leads about 2 cables from ship and in all directions. Unable to get bearing, but imagine that there is little or no alteration in ship's position, as ship's head is same and western mountains appear the same. Hope all is well at Cape Evans and that the other parties have returned safely. Wish we could relieve their anxiety. May 22nd. Obtained good bearings of Beaufort Island, Cape Ross and Dunlop Island, which put ship in a position 18 miles south, 75 degrees east, true from Cape Ross. Since the 14th, when reliable bearings were last obtained, we have drifted northwest by north 7 miles. May 24th. Blizzard from south-southeast continued until 9 p.m. when it moderated, and at 11:45 p.m. wind shifted to northwest, light, with snow. Quite a lot of havoc has been caused during this blow, and the ship has made much northing. In the morning, the crack south of the ship opened to about 3 feet. At 2 p.m., felt heavy shock and the ship heeled to port about 70 degrees. Found ice had cracked from port gangway to northwest and parted from ship from gangway along to stem. Crack extended from stern to southeast. 7:35 p.m., ice cracked from port forechains in line parallel to previous crack. The ice broke again between the cracks and drifted to northwest for about 10 yards. The ice to southward then commenced to break up, causing heavy strain on ship and setting apparently north in large broken fields. Ship badly jammed in. 9:15 p.m. ice closed in again around ship. 2 heavy wind squalls with a short interval between, followed by cessation of wind. We are in a labyrinth of large rectangular floes, some with their points pressing heavily against ship, and high pressure ridges. May 25th. In middle watch felt pressure occasionally. Twilight showed a scene of chaos all around. One floe, about 3 feet in thickness, had upended, driven under ship on port quarter. As far as can be seen, there are heavy blocks of ice screwed up on end, and the scene is like a graveyard. I think swell must have come up under ice from seaward, northeast, McMurdo Sound, and broken the ice, which afterwards started to move under the influence of the blizzard. Hardly think swell came from the sound, as the cracks were wending from northwest to southeast, and also as the sound should be getting icebound by now. If swell came from northeast, then there is open water not far away. I should like to know. I believe the Ross Sea is rarely entirely ice-covered. Have bright moonlight now, which accentuates everything, the beauty and loneliness of our surroundings and uselessness of ourselves while in this prison. So near to Cape Evans, and yet we might as well be anywhere as here. Have made our sledging ration scales, and crew are busy making harness and getting sledging equipment ready for emergencies. Temperature, minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit. May 26th. If the ship is nipped in the ice, the ship's company, 18 hands, will take to 4 sledges with 1 month's rations and make for nearest land. 6 men and 1 sledge will endeavour to make Cape Evans via the western land, Butler Point, Hut Point, etc., the remaining 12 will come along with all possible speed, but no forced marches, killing and depoting penguins and seals for emergency retreats. If the ship remains here and makes no further drift to the north, towards latter end of July, light will be making. The sun returns August 23rd. The sea ice should be fairly safe, and a party of three with 1 month's rations will proceed to Cape Evans.